From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. And it is a huge moment for Georgia sports. After last night's game, Atlanta United is heading to the MLS Cup Final on December 8th.
There is the final whistle. All right, Atlanta, we're coming to you. We'll see you next Saturday night for MLS Cup 2018.
Well, we have got the in-house crowd with us today. GPB reporter Ross Terrell and producer Taylor Gant are with us to give us the latest on both football, American, and global style. Welcome, both of you.
How's it going?
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here. Taylor, I'm going to start with you. The Five Stripes lost to the New York Red Bulls in the Eastern Conference final second leg, but the team still secured its spot in the MLS Cup. So can you explain how a losing in a game results in a winning spot in the finals?
Yeah, oftentimes those two things don't go together that well, do they?
Yeah.
Well, the way it works in the, at least in the last two rounds of the MLS playoffs before the championship game, is you have home and home series. So each team gets a home game. And then when the series is over, you tabulate the goals. You get a few extra credits if you score on the road. But Atlanta had a 3-0 win at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in front of a full house. So they really put a lot of pressure on the Red Bulls to have to go home and have an enormous scoring game if they even wanted to stay close. So it was a 1-0 loss, but they would have had to give up three goals at least to even tie the series again. So Atlanta moves on, and they're going to host the big game this coming, not this coming Saturday, but the Saturday after.
So they basically just had to play defense.
They did. It was not a very pretty game. When you watch Atlanta United games, you're usually used to seeing a lot of flowing play and, you know, a lot of energy from a side that has a lot of scoring potential. But this was just kind of like it was in the muck. It was a game that was based very much on defense, and you know, they knew the result they had to get, so it wasn't going to be anything flashy. It was going to be a lot more workmanlike.
Taylor, the Atlanta United had never beat the New York Red Bulls until this past Sunday, that game, the first home of the home-home series
Indeed.
That you mentioned. That's when they shut them out 3-0 at Mercedes-Benz Stadium mm-hmm. in the first leg of the conference final. So can you talk us through how they managed to best New York and move ahead?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, all season New York and Atlanta were going head-to-head to see who would have the best record of the year and win the Supporters Shield, which means you get home field advantage throughout the playoffs. Atlanta lost out on that, so it seemed that New York would still maybe the better side going into the playoffs. But Atlanta really just turned it on. They got a lot of support from their bench. They were leading 2-0 in the game, and then they got a score from Tito Villalba off the bench to basically make the hill that New York had to climb that much higher. Instead of just scoring twice, they had to score three times. And, you know, I think Atlanta's only lost three times inside their home building. You know, a couple of them have been to New York. But they really used the home field advantage to the highest degree that they possibly could, and they kind of shook off the boogeyman. Their first ever loss was to New York at Bobby Dodd Stadium, so it was nice to finally have that demon exercised, if you will.
A little resolution. It is hard to believe that the success of Atlanta United has pulled off in just 2 years. True on the field and in the stands, with record attendance and financial stability. Here is midfielder Jeff Larenowitz speaking to Fox Sports last night.
What it means to the city of Atlanta, what it means to the people that put this club together, what it means to the guys that came from far away from home to come and play here, our coach, it's all those things. I'm just one guy on the team, but it's really a team effort. It's a citywide effort, to be honest, and we're coming home.
We're coming home. How did Atlanta United manage to win the hearts of Atlanta so quickly? I mean, is it just that people love to cheer for a winner, or is there a real cultural shift towards soccer going on?
We were talking about this with your next guest in the room over here, Josh, who said you'd like to talk a little bit about Atlanta United too, not just music, but he might stick with his segment. But, you know, it can be any number of things. It's the incredible cultural diversity of this city. It's the incredible amount of transplants we have here who have never really had a soccer team to root for. You know, I was talking to a guy on MARTA who is completely head to toe in Atlanta United gear. And I said, oh, how long have you been a soccer fan? He's like, this season, you know, I just saw the excitement. I wanted to get in on it. And I think that's really, that's really carried over to where people who are, you know, traditionally maybe not sports fans or even soccer fans, they go to a game, they really experience the atmosphere, and it's something very wholly unique to any other thing in sports. It's kind of its own little niche right now that it's got so much attention and so much excitement around it.
How about for you, Ross? You're representing here for the traditional football, traditional American football. Are you a convert to Atlanta United?
I'm not. I have a hat, and that's about it.
You don't
it.
Have the whole gear.
No, not at all. Not at all. I'm still a traditional football guy. I mean, soccer's great. They had the sellout crowds, the All-Star Game, and champion championship game coming, and we haven't had a champion here in Atlanta since, what,
the 95.
90s. Braves did it. So, but I will leave soccer to the rest of the
city. Okay, all right. You get your time in just a minute. But, Taylor, let's look to the future. Soccer, the world's most popular sport, not as prominent, of course, in the U.S., and we don't usually have the best coaches and players. Atlanta United managed to buck that trend and secure some real phenoms.
That's right.
But head coach Tata Martino is leaving next year to coach the Mexican national team, and people are wondering whether Martinez will stay, for example. He set the record for goals during an MLS season. Can Atlanta United sustain this kind of success without Tata?
Well, it's going to be difficult. I mean, the whole concept behind Atlanta United was different from what a lot of new soccer teams do. So instead of bringing in maybe one of the really established stars, do you think what LA did with David Beckham, a name that everybody knows, it's very flashy, they decided to hedge their bets on young players who hadn't played their best soccer yet, but their potential was very, very high. And it helped having Tata Martino, who's, you know, a very big name, South Central America, you know, with his work for the Argentinian national team, to lure some of those players in and to sell them on the idea of playing in a place that had, you know, very little soccer record to speak of. It's going to be tough. Hopefully they'll be able to find somebody to fill that void. Miguel Almiron, who's one of the most popular players, is basically confirmed to be gone. He's probably going to end up playing in England. There's a couple of teams bidding very heavily to get his services next year. So it's going to be interesting, you know, especially after you win a championship. You know, it's always interesting to see potentially if they do, you know, how a team rebounds after kind of having reached the pinnacle. How do you sustain that?
All right. So, all right, Ross, we're getting to you. Who are you pulling for in Saturday's SEC championship game? I'm not asking you. I'm asking the audience. I'm talking about the Georgia-Alabama rematch with GPB's Ross Terrell and Taylor Cant. So you can let us know where your loyalties lie on Twitter. We're at OST Talk, or we're in our Facebook group. You can let us know or leave us a voice message. We're at 404-500-9457. Well, of course, tomorrow, the 2018 SEC Championship game at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. First time Georgia and Atlanta have played each other since January, when the Crimson Tide beat the Bulldogs in the national championship match. Alabama's fifth national win since 2009, all under coach Nick Saban. And Ross Terrell, you were there.
Yes. Before the game started, President Trump took the spotlight. He was greeted by protesters outside the stadium, including Isabel Hidalgo.
Basically, we don't want him to think he can just come here without anybody saying, we don't like you, we want you impeached, you're nuts, get out of our town.
Inside, he stood on the field for the national anthem, where he was met with applause and boos. But then it was time for the main event, the national championship game. It was a raucous crowd as the game began. And Georgia jumped out to a 13-0 lead at halftime. Defensive player of the game, Deron Payne, says something changed in the Alabama locker room at half.
I think we went in and Coach Saban told us we needed to tighten things up, and I guess the team heard Coach, and we came out and tried to play our best ball.
In the third quarter, Alabama head coach Nick Saban rolled the dice and came up big. He benched their starting quarterback for a true freshman, Tua Tagovailoa.
I thought Tua would give us a better chance and a spark, which he certainly did.
Tagovailoa led the Crimson Tide to their first touchdown of the game, about 6 minutes into the third quarter. UGA responded with a touchdown of their own, but Alabama scored the next 13 points of the game to tie it at 20 apiece. They missed the field goal that would have won it in regulation, but instead finished the job in overtime. Tua threw a game-winning 41-yard touchdown pass to fellow freshman Devontae Smith.
I looked back out and he was wide open, so I hit him, and now here we are now, thank God.
It was the freshman that helped win it all. That turned out to be the play and the story of the game. Alabama coach Nick Saban says he can't remember a time when they had to rely on so many young players to win a matchup.
A lot of those guys are really mature for their age, and they were ready to make contribution. And they certainly did a fantastic job for us this year. There's no doubt about that.
With the win, Saban remains undefeated against former assistant coaches. He's now 12-0. This time, he knocked off Georgia head coach Kirby Smart, who worked with Saban for 9 years at Alabama. The Crimson Tide claimed their 17th national title. For NPR News, I'm Ross Terrell in Atlanta.
There are people in our newsroom that get a little PTSD from even hearing that, Russ. But thank you for filing that for the network. SEC championship game, we're going to see those two teams from the national championship, Georgia and Alabama, meet for the first time since January. So how's Georgia's season been going?
Georgia's season's been going well. They're 11-1. Their only loss was to LSU. But their defense is what really sticks out. Jake Fromm is back, who played in that national championship game. And this really looks like a team who was on a revenge tour to get back to this exact moment. And they have their opponent in Alabama.
So we heard a little from last year's game. Taylor, you were also at the national championship game when Alabama came back to beat Georgia 26-23 in overtime. How has Alabama been doing?
Well, they haven't lost since. So the juggernaut season continues. There's a lot of basically there is a I think a two touchdown spread right now as far as UGA being an underdog in this game, and the team's only improved since that moment when they won in overtime against UGA. Tua Tagovailoa has only gotten better as a passer. The defense is still as stout as it always is, and they've been winning their games I think by an average of around 20 points or so. Or the team hasn't even gotten that close to them. So it's a bit of a long shot for UGA this time. If history indicates anything, though, it's going to be a close game. I don't think it's going to be a blowout one way or the other.
So who are the other players to watch in this rematch besides Tua? What do you think, Ross?
You have DeAndre Swift and Elijah Holyfield, two of running backs from UGA who look a lot like Nick Chubb and Sonny Michel from last year. Mm. And then Alabama has a 1,000-yard receiver who you have to contend with. I think Alabama is a picture of dominance, though. And there have been games this year where we thought when they played LSU, oh, it's not going to be a blowout, and they somehow just keep winning. And I expect that to happen again on Saturday.
What could make Georgia win, do you think?
If God's on their side. No. They would have to come out and play near perfect football, and they would need turnovers and need mistakes from Alabama. But, I mean, this team, they might be able to beat some NFL teams. They're that good.
Yeah, I think if there's any chance, you can't have Jake Fromm, who's the quarterback for the Bulldogs, trying to throw the ball all over the place, because the defense is just too good. You can't beat them just one way. You have to mix things up. So, like Ross said, it's going to take basically a near flawless offensive performance to stick around with Alabama.
So the 2019 National College Football Championship is going to be played in the Bay Area. How will the results of this SEC championship figure into which team goes to the national championship? How does that work?
Ross, would you take it away?
Yeah, this will have direct impact. So right now you have the top four teams get into a playoff, and those four teams have a chance to play for the national championship. Alabama right now is number one. Georgia's number four. If Alabama wins this game, they're in, no doubt. It gets tricky because if Georgia wins this game, you could possibly see these two teams each get in. Each of them will have one loss, and nobody is going to say Alabama's not one of the best four right now.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, there was a funny plot twist earlier this year when the University of Central Florida declared itself national champion. That was because it had gone undefeated all season. Now, here's a skit. This was passed around online. Alabama fan and a Georgia fan reacting to this bogus story that Central Florida had canceled the championship game.
What? How can they do that?
Well, they're undefeated and you're not.
But we beat the number one team in the nation in the semis.
And we just clobbered a current Heisman winner and beat five top 25 teams.
They beat a 3-9 UConn on the road and won the Peach Bowl.
You're joking, right? This is a joke.
They've already scheduled their championship parade. I'm sorry, boys, but it's over.
Sad music. Ain't over yet. The NCAA recognized UCF as national champion alongside Alabama. How does this mean any team can just declare itself winner?
That seemed a bit more of a PR move than anything else. We always have these conversations. We've had them for years as far as, smaller schools who have these really good seasons. Should they be a part of these? We've just had the tournaments only a few years old, but a little while back in the early to mid 2000s, Boise State was the team that was obviously in Idaho, very small school playing, against other small schools, but they always had these great seasons and they were always clamoring to be a part of the championship picture. But I think you're always going to have these debates, as long as the playoff system continues, that the small guys should get a chance too. But it's tough, especially when, they don't get a chance to showcase their abilities on a national stage like the other teams do.
Well, since I moved to the South, I've been told that the SEC championship is the real national championship. Alabama, Georgia, both SEC teams, they went to the Nationals early this year. What do you make of that?
That used to be the rhetoric. I mean, that's why we got to the system, is because we had SEC teams essentially playing each other in the national championship, much like last year. But you have a number of other teams who, Oklahoma's, the Ohio State's, even the Michigans, the Notre Dame's, Clemson's, who would say, no, wait a minute, you still have to go through us. And those teams are pretty well. I mean, Clemson won a championship 2 years ago. Ohio State won the first ever championship in this format. So I wouldn't quite give that title solely to that.
Sounds like a jaded Ohio State fan over there.
Okay, so have you all heard of the NFL? It's this thing that's out there.
The real football?
The real football. How is it? How are Atlanta Falcons been doing?
Not good. Not good. They're currently on a 3-game losing streak. They're 4-7. Mathematically, could they get into the playoffs? Yes. Realistically, not a chance. They can't win their division. They were eliminated when they lost to the Saints. They lost to Cleveland. They lost to Dallas. This team should probably start looking ahead to the draft and preparing for next season.
All right. Any midseason picks then for the Super Bowl? It's only a little over 2 months away now.
I think you have to keep putting money on the Patriots until Tom Brady calls it quits. He's still, the most accomplished quarterback in league history at this point. So I think you got to keep going with him.
Ross,
I will say there is, I don't know if you guys know, a Super Bowl curse. No host city, their team has never won a Super Bowl.
Right.
So I guess we knew coming into this a couple years ago, the Falcons weren't going to make it. people want to say the Chiefs, the Rams, Saints, Patriots. Don't rule out the Chargers and the Bears just yet. My dark horse is the Chicago Bears.
Interesting.
Okay. Yes, I really understand and agree everything you're talking about. GPB reporter Ross Terrell, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And our GPB Morning Edition producer, Taylor Gant, thank you.
Oh, thanks for having me.
In honor of tomorrow's SEC championship, we've got some Redcoats marching band music to play us out until we hear the best albums of 2018 from Paste editor Josh Jackson.